Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 53 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Sippets. I know when I got started with my conversation with Daryl, I said it was the 52nd episode, so sort of ignore that. I guess I was a little behind myself there. This is the 53rd episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast. We are meeting with our last clinic presenter for the 2017 Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic coming up on April 22nd. Hope you can join us. Today we're going to be talking to Daryl Nelson from the National Team Development Program. Daryl's been the only guy there at the program for, I guess, 16 years now. So the guy, he's a wealth of knowledge. He's obviously a partner in the site here and somebody that I learn from every day. So it's a great guy to be around, and hopefully you'll get a lot out of this podcast episode. He's going to be presenting on core training for hockey. So the big question is, you know, really, what is the core? And what does a prototypical hockey core look like? And so we'll talk a little bit about that and what we can do to sort of bulletproof our athletes. So today's episode is going to be a little bit of a short one, so we'll go ahead and let's get on the phone with Daryl Nelson from the National Team Development Program. All right, today for the 52nd episode of the Hockey Strength Podcast, I have the distinct pleasure of talking to a guy that I see almost every day here in the facility, Daryl Nelson, with the National Team Development Program. Daryl, you've been there for, gosh, how long has it been, 17, 18 years now?
This year is 16 years.
Oh, 16, okay. All right, so you've been there for a while, and, you know, you and I, we have the site together, and it's totally a pleasure working with you. Mostly, the reason I'm talking about this now is because I think a lot of what I learned about core training is what I learned from you as I was first getting into the business. So for the Great Lakes Clinic coming up here in the next week or so, you're going to be talking about core training for hockey. And, you know, core training is something that's been beat to death, at least in the fitness industry, for the last bunch of years. But we're seeing some pretty unique things in hockey. So talk about what you see as the misconceptions of core training and what you think are the most important parts of that.
So I think common mistakes or misconceptions, well, I think one is, talking about the core, quote unquote, is kind of a unique thing because there's really nothing that defines what the core is. You know, if you talk about the shoulder or the knee, there's like specific function structures that everybody would agree upon are part of the knee. And you can't, like, you can't open an anatomy textbook and go to the core section and see what core is. So it kind of varies depending on who you ask. So it can get kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, vague or ambiguous or what the right terminology is. So when you're talking, when I talk about core, I'm mostly talking about lumbar, spine, and pelvic, you know, lumbopelvic stuff is what I'm referring to. You know, you talk to people like Thomas Myers or somebody like that, he's saying, well, the body's core goes from the arch of your foot up to the roof of your mouth. Like, okay, well, I'm not. You know, so it depends what, it really depends what you want to get after there, I suppose. But that's one thing is that no one, if you're going to have a conversation about the core, you have to define what it is that you're going to talk about because it's not really clear cut.
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, usually when somebody says, where's your core? A lot of times you get the, with their hands, they'll put a hand on their knee and a hand on the bottom of their rib cage and just call everything in between there the core. But I think as you're going to find out, there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, I think, so again, I mean, you can define it, I guess, in different ways. So there's lots of other stuff going on that I wouldn't necessarily say is really something I would talk about specifically for core training per se. But I think, so that's one obstacle to overcome is knowing what it is exactly you want to address. And then the other thing I think is, a lot of people are still doing stuff where they're trying to use their core to generate power and force. And obviously we know that's not what we want to do. The core is mostly a stabilizer and it's a way to transfer power between your upper and lower extremities and to put force into the ground. So that's still, it's not, for some people it's old news, but a lot of people are still not making that distinction, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think one of my favorite stories from you, and this is several years ago now, but one of my favorite stories from you is your presentation to a group of physical therapists. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago I did that. It was a very last-minute thing. They had like an in-service continuing education thing at MedSport, which is where we contract our athletic trainers and our healthcare from for the teams. And, you know, I recommended people like Stuart McGill and Shirley Sarman and Thomas Myers, and most of them had never heard of any of those people, which I thought was weird because those people are all therapists.
Right, so it is.
I kind of thought it would be the other way around, that the therapists would be the ones that knew more than I did. But that really, it wasn't really the case.
Yeah, so this is all still kind of coming into its own in terms of, I think it's ubiquitous, but I'm around, you know, I'm around you and I'm around other really smart people. At least I put myself around them. So, to me, this is something that we know, but it's not practiced all around. So what's unique about your players? I know looking through your presentation ahead of time here, there's a lot of player pictures. What are we looking at in those player pictures?
Yeah, so I think one thing we're seeing, at least when we talk about higher-end players that are more likely to play pro or college hockey, that are making it to a high level, USHL hockey, whatever it is, is a key kind of, I keep seeing, at least in America, and I'm dealing only with American players, so maybe in other parts of the world it may be different, but what I'm seeing is the same body type and the same physical traits over and over again. There seems to be like a distinct body type that makes a good hockey player. And I think you can see that in other sports too, like baseball pitchers have a certain body type. You know, football running backs have a certain body type. You know, tight ends have a certain body type. Right? And I think there's a pattern that keeps repeating itself over and over and over and over. And so I think if you want to be a good strength and conditioning coach, part of what you do is recognize what that pattern is and realize that some exercises and some modes of training aren't really good for a given body type. So what we see a lot of in ice hockey is a lot of anterior pelvic tilt and guys with long legs, and usually they're also have long arms, and they're usually also bow-legged. And so from the standpoint of core training, what we're really looking at is anterior pelvic tilt is caused by muscular imbalance. The hamstring muscles are usually too long, and the rectus abdominis is usually too long, and hip flexors are too short. And so what happens is it pulls the pelvis forward. So we're getting a lot of lumbar extension in the guys that we see. Over and over and over again. I think this year, actually, between our two teams, under 17 and under 18 team, we only had one guy that wasn't anteriorly tilted out of 45 players.
So then what, obviously there's some kind of mechanical advantage there. There's some advantage that, you know, when there's a body type that fits a sport, there's pretty clearly a mechanical advantage or something that's helping them, that's lending itself to that sport. How do you draw the line between, you know, helping these guys and at the same time making sure you're not taking away their advantage?
I'm not trying to take away their advantage, obviously, for sure. That's a good way probably to get fired, but, I don't think that you could really take it away. Like, I think that, like, that pattern you see is, like, it's kind of ingrained. I don't know how much I've never seen a guy really make, like, huge amount of change, but I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to give them the awareness of that posture, first of all, and make them know that it's there, and then also to have some body awareness and the neuromuscular control to be able to use their abdominals and their glutes and their hamstrings and all these things to try to keep them from dumping their pelvis, from rotating forward, anteriorly tilting to a point where they're like just hanging on the connective tissue in the discs in their lumbar spine, to get them to where they have some muscular control and they're not just using the passive tissue. You know, they're not just putting their weight on their passive tissues, like the ligaments that go between vertebrae and so forth. So I think that's really what we're trying to accomplish, to avoid or reduce having lower back pain. And I guess I get ahead of myself there. So the big advantage to that, and I think you find that body type in a lot of people that are fast, like a lot of sprint-type athletes, the big advantage is it gives them more more hip extension rearward, so they get a longer stride, especially in the first couple of steps when they're really pushing back. So it's advantageous for accelerating.
You're talking about the lumbar body extension. Type is. Right.
Yes, the anterior pelvic tilt and the lumbar extension. Because when they're extending their hip, they're getting a more push behind them. They get more stride length behind them, I guess is the way to say it. In bow-leggedness, I think, is an advantage, a big advantage for hockey, because being bow-legged, you're outwards. So you're on your outside edges, so the players can generate more power when they skate. But there's nothing I've ever done in my training, at least from a core standpoint, that you need to really worry about from that aspect of them being bow-legged.
Yeah, there's nothing you're going to do to fix that anyway.
Yeah, there's nothing to change that. In my experience, there's no consideration to say, well, I'm going to do or not do something because someone is bow-legged. I've never come across that, as being a problem. No. So you take that body type. The person's got a lot of anterior pelvic tilt and a lot of lumbar extension, and they have long arms. So a position that's going to be really hard for that person to get into is going to be like a back squat or like a behind-the-neck press, any kind of like behind-the-neck lifting where their shoulder is externally rotated and abducted. Usually people don't have the shoulder mobility to open up that much anyway. Mix that with someone that's got really long arms, and it makes them harder to get their hands behind the barbell, like in a back squat. And then if they're already in lumbar extension with anterior tilts, you're really, like, that's a position that's really going to exasperate their problem, and that could eventually lead to them having, obviously, back injury, back pain. So I think it's important to consider what types of things to avoid. So external rotation and abduction of the shoulder under load is not a good position for someone that's anteriorly tilted, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you can see them stretch right into that position. You've got some great videos throughout the presentation that are going to show that. And, going through, there's a ton of videos, that you're corresponding the videos directly to, the issue or the problem or the things that we're going to avoid. So, and there's examples of what we are going to do too. So, definitely looking forward to hearing you present. I know I tend to learn something each time. I've seen you, obviously I'm around you a lot and I see you present a lot also, but, I feel like every time I come away with some new thing that I didn't know before. So, definitely looking forward to that and hearing your presentation on core training for the Great Lakes Clinic. Coming down to the wire here, guys, last week before the clinic, and that's on April 22nd. We're going to have Daryl. Daryl's going to be presenting. I'll be presenting on nutrition strategies for hockey players. Devin McConnell is going to be talking about recovery and regeneration strategies. Steve McGregor is going to be talking about the data he's collected through the NTDP and what they're learning through those players. And Greg Roskovensky is going to be talking about assessments and injury prevention stuff. He's a physical therapist and going to be giving us some strategies to work with that. So I think, Daryl, talking about all that and putting everybody together like that, it sounds like, we're covering a lot of bases. I think we're covering the recovery side, we're covering the training side, we're covering the injury and assessment side, and a little bit of data collection in there as well. So I think this year we've put together a great lineup, and I'm looking forward to the turnout.
Yeah, it's pretty well-rounded, I think, and I really like it, like you say, to see different perspectives and different opinions and people that have a different professional background, a therapist or physiologist. Another thing I actually kind of like about having the clinic, not that I necessarily enjoy hearing myself talk, but when you are going to go up in front of your peers and present on a topic, you really figure out what your viewpoint is. You really decide what you know and what you don't know and what you're going to talk about and have come away with, by really thinking about that, what you're going to say and having a concrete opinion platform to stand on when you talk about a topic.
Yeah, an opinion that's backed by facts or science or something besides what you saw on Twitter or something.
Right, yeah. All exactly. Right.
So we'll wrap up here. Like I've been saying, in our interviews with the clinic presenters, we're keeping them pretty short. Really what we want to do is give a little bit of a taste and leaves more specific things for the presentation. But hopefully there's a couple take homes from this. If you're just listening to the podcast, if you can join us, we still have room. If you can make it to Ann Arbor here in for the next week's presentation, that's on April 22nd. The Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic. Head to greatlakeshockeystrength.com and you can check out that website and the lineup and register for the event. So, Daryl, thanks for joining us. I'm looking forward to your presentation, and we'll see you around the gym here.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.
All right, that wraps up our conversation with Daryl Nelson from the National Team Development Program. Daryl is the last clinic presenter that we're interviewing here, as a clinic is coming up next week on the 22nd. I did not do an episode on myself, but I will say my presentation for the clinic is about nutritional strategies for hockey players. So we're going to talk basically in two parts. We're going to talk about, number one, what is good life nutrition, right? So we don't want to get hockey specific. Just like any other training, we're not going to get hockey specific until there's good life habits and what good life diet is. And then we'll go into some strategies about not only what's important for hockey players in particular, but also how do we get people to eat correctly, right? So there's plenty of diet information out there, but what really has to happen is a change of habit, which is the trickiest part. Obviously, changing behavior is very difficult. So how do we change behavior and make it so that players want to eat well and recognize the value? So we'll go through some strategies there, not just the diet and the science of the diet, but also the science of habit change and, you know, creating good habits for people so that they're more apt to eat well in the future. So that's what my presentation is going to be about. We look forward to seeing you at the Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic. If you need more information on that, again, the website is greatlakeshockeystrength.com. And you can check out the presenters and what we're going to be talking about there. So also the last, I guess, four podcast episodes have been with those presenters. So check it out. You'll get a good taste of what we're gonna get on next Saturday, and we're really looking forward to it. And of course, the social is definitely the most fun part. I guess nice time for us to unwind, go out and talk shop. So we look forward to seeing you there. And if you can't make it in this year, we'd love to hear from you. I think we're gonna package the presentations together, and maybe sell it as a separate item if you aren't able to make the clinic. So keep an eye out for that, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. This has been Brian Sippets for the Hockey Strength Podcast. Until next time, guys, be sure to train smart and check out hockeystrengthandconditioning.com, the world's best resource for training hockey players. We'll talk to you next time, guys.